VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
This is Cashing Out on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
We have a final score and an opponent for BYU. Welcome back into Cashing Out. I'm Dustin Sweetelson, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Texas finishes off NC State 68-66 as NC State attempted a football pass to the other side of the court. The three-point attempt for the win was blocked by the Longhorns. So in the end, the Wolfpack not able to get up a potential shot there, at least towards the basket. And Texas, who led for most of this game, ends up advancing. They will be the 11 seed taking on BYU in the West in the opening round of the NCAA tournament. We'll do more on the tournament a little bit later on in the show. Right now, though, want to talk a little NBA. And to do that, we're going to welcome in our buddy Michael Fiddle, NBA handicapper, Yahoo Sports, Action Network contributor at Fiddle's Picks on X. And he joins us on the Progressive Guest Line. So talk to me, man. There's a lot going on in the NBA, but the biggest news today, which kind of surprised me because maybe I haven't been as locked in, Anthony Edwards going to miss a couple weeks here dealing with, I believe, a knee injury. Now, for Minnesota, wasn't a problem tonight as they wound up beating Phoenix 116-104, but what does this do to how you view the Timberwolves going forward? Anything?
So I kind of expected the Anthony Edwards news to come in. He restrained his knee two games ago and then ended up suiting up and playing through it because they played against the Oklahoma City Thunder. Obviously, he's got a little bit of beef with SGA, so he wanted to suit up for that game, and he was miserable, incredibly inefficient, couldn't find his shot, was getting picked apart defensively, definitely not himself. That knee was clearly bothering him. Now he gets shut down for 2 weeks. Now, there's two main things that happen here. First, player value-wise, Anthony Edwards probably worth 4.5 points against the spread in a downgrade on power rating for the Minnesota Timberwolves. I was not surprised they covered today against the Phoenix Suns. That line moved from 8 to 3.5, so that was that 4.5 point move that we got market confirmation on. At least the Timberwolves traded for Ayo Dosunmu at the trade deadline and brought in another guard to flank DiVincenzo. And so Naz Reid also banged up with a shoulder but played through it. Julius Randle starting to play well again after a little post-All-Star game slump. So looking at this Minnesota Timberwolves team, I'm actually not too concerned with them. They have a great coach, good infrastructure, shoot a lot of threes, can play into the variance, you know, play good defense all around. So I'm not too concerned with the Timberwolves moving forward. Phoenix was in a terrible, terrible schedule spot, second night of a back-to-back as they head into a 6 games and 8 days stretch here right now. So looking to fade Phoenix for the foreseeable future for the next like week and week and a half with their schedule. Timberwolves wise, what really matters is Anthony Edwards is now probably going to play 64 games maximum if he returns in 2 weeks and then plays the rest of the games, which means he's no longer qualified for the award. So we've seen some market moves towards SGA to win clutch player of the year in addition to the MVP, but I actually don't think that line has moved enough. The SGA clutch player of the year, like anything less than minus 400, you know, a 75% implied probability on the betting exchanges, that's probably really good because Anthony Edwards is next man up for that, and he's likely going to be disqualified. So we're seeing SGA crush at the end of games right now. He had an amazing and one to really be the dagger the other day against Minnesota. I would be looking to be okay with Minnesota for the foreseeable, but also pick up some SGA clutch player of the year.
We're probably approaching a world with the NBA rules for the awards where, like, Mikal Bridges is by de facto going to end up winning one of these awards because he plays every game here in the association. Michael Fiddle is our guest at Fiddle's Picks on X for all of the information with his NBA betting show Monday, Wednesday, Friday, all of it there at Fiddle's Picks on X. All right, let's talk about some of the stuff you like coming up for the Wednesday card. And let's begin with the Rockets in a bounce back spot against the Lakers, where they got embarrassed over the weekend. You got Kevin Durant contemplating what he's doing as a player right now. And we're looking at a spread of 2.5. Total was actually a little bit high when I looked at it at 222 in a hook. I was thinking about the under. What do you want to do with this game?
So this is a clear Rockets buy for me, as gross as that is. And it pains me to say, It has to be a rocket spot. Generally, in these short order rematches, a back-to-back set between these two teams, they're playing twice in a row within 3 days. It's not a back-to-back in terms of days, but back-to-back in terms of games, both in Houston. So we got a price for this game at 2.5 last time, and we saw clear, sharp action on the Rockets and bringing it out to 3, a soft 3.5, and then Alperen Şengün was announced out and the line moved massively the other direction. So sitting here at 2.5, like, you have to buy the Rockets now because Şengün is off the injury report. So we know this is an absolute floor price for the Rockets. And then combine the fact that generally in these short order rematches, you just want to play the inverse of what happened in game one. Look for the market to overreact a little bit to a one game sample size. And so the Rockets were literally winning in the fourth quarter at some point until their offense totally sputtered. So bringing back Şengün, getting a good number, this has to be a rocket spot for me. It's disgusting. I watched Durant step on the half court line for a backcourt. I watched him not get the ball up in more than 8 seconds in an 8-court second violation. I watched them try and inbound the ball and literally just hand the ball to the Lakers because they couldn't get it in the 5 seconds. And then they just, you know, threw it to half court and let LeBron run away for a game sealing dunk. And I watched my bet completely crash the other night. But given the price, given the situation, it has to be the Rockets. You generally see a good, like, kind of trend. I'm not really a trends better, but a good pattern with these back-to-back spots between two teams where if the favored team doesn't win the first one, they have a much better win and cover rate. So Rockets as a slight favorite here, fit the bill at a good number. So give me Rockets minus 2.5.
Michael Fiddle is our guest, NBA handicapper, NBA betting with Fiddle, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, 11 a.m. Eastern. All the info at Fiddle's Picks on X. All right, another game you like on Wednesday. You got Toronto laying 7.5 and Chicago taking on the Bulls. The total, 232.5, and that's the direction you're looking. How do you want to play this one at 232.5?
So, Dustin, we just talked about the Anthony Edwards injuries, and I think really the name of the game in March NBA capping is projecting these injury reports. And looking at this spread at Toronto minus 7.5 and the way that the total sits, the spread is projecting that the Bulls are going to rest some guys for this game. And the Bulls have a back-to-back the next night, so they'll play Wednesday against Toronto, Thursday against Cleveland. And what some of these tanking teams are doing is they're playing their players against the better teams, hoping, you know what, we'll still lose that game even with our better players. And so we'll sit them in one half of the back-to-back and we'll sit them against the worst team. In this case, Toronto is worse than Cleveland, so I'm projecting that the Bulls sit some of their guys, and I would make this line, you know, Bulls plus 4.5 if this situation wasn't popping up. So the spread really starts to factor in that the Bulls are going to rest some guys. The total has not moved enough. We've seen some market moves from 234.5 down to 233, 232.5 starting to pop up. This would be closer to 230, 230.5. And so I think once we front this injury news, you take the under now at the best you can at 233 or 232.5 even. And I think you'd get some good injury news going your way and probably 2 points of CLV at tip-off.
All right, I want to get your opinions on a couple other games going on tomorrow. Now, there's always the threat of the tanking situation. Everyone likes to do these money line parlays where you fade the teams that are tanking. But one game jumped out to me is the Clippers and the Pelicans for some reason, at least for player props. There was a lot of matchups that I was into. It's a short spread. 1.5 New Orleans is favored. 232.5 is the total. You've got no Benedict Mathurin for a little, but Darius Garland looks pretty good in his role with the Clippers right now. Did you think about playing anything in this game with the short spread?
So the reason why I'm kind of stuck in confusion land with this game is these two teams play each other twice in a row, Wednesday and Thursday, back-to-back Clippers games in New Orleans, full-on baseball series. As people talk about the WBC, baseball series going all around the NBA as they try and reduce travel right before the playoffs. So this is Clippers back-to-back. Garland is questionable. Kawhi is questionable. Benedict Mathurin is out. I really don't know how this is going to go. And Garland has been sitting one half of the back-to-backs since he's rejoined, since coming off the foot injuries, and since he's been part of the Clippers. So the best way to play this is to play Garland overs, because the chance that he plays with Mathurin out or possibly Kawhi out too means his usage is going to be sky high. And if he sits for this game, that ticket void. So it has some real asymmetry here where you just have to take a Garland over. It's the only direction you could possibly look if you're going to try and get in at this point in the market. If you're going to try and play an under, you should wait on it. But right now, a Garland over makes a lot of sense. Worst thing that happens, I think, if you don't get good closing line value, you get the ticket voided because he's out.
That's true. That is very true. He is Michael Fiddle. Check him out. NBA Betting Show with Fiddle. Monday, Wednesday, Friday, 11 a.m. Eastern at Fiddle's Picks on X for all the info. Read him, Yahoo Sports, the Action Network, and more. Appreciate the time as always, my friend. We will do it again very soon.
Of course. Thank you, Dustin. Awesome. No money line parlays.
No money line parlays. Don't do it. Don't do it. You're going to get burnt. Awesome stuff from our guy, Michael Fiddle, as usual there, with very sharp information. Speaking of sharp, how about the Sharp Plays? Founded in 2011, they just completed another dominant run, including a 2025 that saw bankrolls double. 15 straight years of winning for them, and it's all documented. Records, logs, posted publicly. SharpPlays.com for full performance auditing. That's something that separates the Sharp Plays from most of the betting industry. When the Sharp Plays moves, sportsbooks take notice. Advanced AI tools, trusted insider intelligence that ID prices and value before the numbers shift. Respected, feared, watched. Start winning with them at sharpplays.com. I'm Dustin Sweetelson. This is Cashing Out on VSiN, the sports betting network. A lot to get to as far as the NCAA tournament is concerned, and we have a lot of numbers that we need to crunch in our next segment. It's a special Sharp Week edition of Rank and File, where we're going to break down some of the best and worst teams, best coaches, I should say, against the spread in the NCAA tournament. We'll look at tempo, because if you've been listening here, some of the key factors you're looking for in an underdog who can upset a favorite is that tempo, the slower paced teams, but more importantly, the ones that can shoot the ball efficiently as well. So we're all over crunching the numbers. A Sharp Week edition of Rank and File will come your way in the next segment. Later on in the program, Scott Spreitzer, professional handicapper, will be with us, get his thoughts on the NCAA tournament as well. But when we return, we're going to find the best strategy crunching the numbers on Cashing Out.
You're here because you want an edge. That's what separates listeners from winners. But let's be real, mindset alone doesn't get bets home. Pros win because they've got the tools, the data, and the discipline. And now so can you. VSiN Pro gives you access to the same real-time insights the sharps use. No secrets, no fluff, just actionable info that moves markets. Tap the link and see why serious bettors are turning knowledge into profit with VSiN Pro.
Out here on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Cashing Out rolls on from the Circa Sportsbook in downtown Las Vegas. Dustin Sweetelson here, you there. Thanks for making us part of your night, however you may be tuning in. SiriusXM Channel 158, YouTube TV, the Visa Watch app, and radio affiliates across the United States of God Bless America. 15 minutes from now, Aaron Torres, Fox Sports, with his thoughts on the NCAA tournament. Scott Spreitzer in about an hour and 15 minutes with a great strategy to look for potential national champions. We have a lot to get to between now and then. We are going to tackle everything going on in the NCAA tournament. We're going to play a Sweet 16 edition of Dead or Alive futures bets to look at. As the paths are now out, is there anyone worth betting with a juicy number next to it? That will be Dead or Alive in 30 minutes here on the show. But right now, want to do a special Sharp Week edition of Rank and File as we crunch the numbers and just try to file away this information for when we're placing our wagers. So we'll begin by looking at the best coaches covering the number in the field this year. Dan Hurley, 17-3 against the spread, covering as a head coach in college basketball in the NCAA tournament. Then you have Andy Enfield after him at 10-3 at SMU. They will play in the play-in game. We'll preview that game coming up a little bit later on in the show against Miami of Ohio. Hubert Davis, 9-2 against the spread with North Carolina. Remember that miraculous run all the way to the title game. And a lot of times as an underdog, he was covering. So that's why he's 9-2 against the spread. How about John Gross from Akron? 7-2 covering the number. Former Illinois head coach, now with the Zips. They were trendy a year ago. They're trendy this year. They're catching 8 points in their opener against Texas Tech, and I can't argue against it. I bet it as soon as I saw the number. I don't care that it's trendy. They might be a team we're discussing a little bit later on in the hour as far as the Sweet 16 is concerned. And then you have Purdue's Matt Painter, 27-14 against the spread, covering in the NCAA tournament. Those are the best. How about the worst coaches in terms of against the spread? Now, I'll give you an addition on top of the graphic here because I saw this after the fact. Pat Kelsey at Louisville. It's only a five-game sample size. 0-5 against the spread in his career. He's had a couple other stops before Louisville, but he's 0-1 against the spread at Louisville. 0-5 in his career in the NCAA tournament. Kevin Willard at Villanova. He's just 4-7 covering the number in his first year with the Wildcats. Tommy Lloyd. How about a program and a coach with a lot of expectations, 3-7 against the spread in the NCAA tournament? Meanwhile, every single one of us has them with the clearest path going to the national title game and winning it. So we may be looking foolish for backing Tommy Lloyd, who doesn't have a great cover rate. However, straight up, that's what we need. Randy Bennett. For as many times as St. Mary's has been in the mix here, just 6-12 covering the number, they're laying 3.5 against Texas A&M. That is a tough one to call for me because the contrasting styles. Jamie Dixon at TCU, only 10-19 against the spread, was also at Pitt prior to that. So chunk of that coming from both stops for him. And then Rick Barnes. We all know the Rick Barnes story as far as the big dance is concerned. He's just 24-38 against the spread. Now, if you're going to look for underdogs that could potentially pull off the upset, it's very rare you're going to find one in the opening round that's looking to run and gun, trying to go shot for shot with a team that is favored for a reason, because they have more talent. If you're going to find a team to pull off the outright upset, it's going to be because they slow it down, limited possessions, and they make the most of the few possessions they have. So here are your slowest adjusted tempo teams in the NCAA tournament, according to KenPom. We'll begin with Northern Iowa. They're catching a big number against St. John's. That is a very trendy dog that a lot of people are on. I'm on the first half under in that game. It's 10.5. Johnny's favored. 131.5 is the total. But that tempo combined with the defense and the guard play that Northern Iowa has, that's why people like them. Iowa is after them. Then you have Houston. Clemson on the list, and that's worth noting. The first four teams we've listed, two of them face each other, Iowa and Clemson. I'm on that under 131.5 when it dropped. At this point, at 128.5, I probably would still be on the under, but I don't love that at 128.5. Purdue plays at a slower pace than I anticipated looking at these numbers here than UConn. Siena, although Siena's catching 28.5 against Duke right now, I wouldn't be able to touch that one. It was 27.5 now. But I wouldn't be able to touch them. UCLA, low possession game against UCF. I think that makes UCF a little bit live as a 6-point dog in that matchup. Then Hofstra against Bama. That is complete contrasting styles. And you have Troy rounding out the top 10 slowest adjusted tempo teams in the NCAA tournament. Let's go to the fastest teams now. We're Alabama, as we had Hofstra listed before at number 9. Alabama's number 1 in the nation in terms of tempo teams in the NCAA tournament, I should say. They might be number 1 in the nation. I got to go back and look. I forgot. But they are the fastest tempo among NCAA tournament teams. 73.1 for them. South Florida is after that. They take on Louisville. And South Florida has been a very trendy dog. And we just mentioned that Pat Kelsey doesn't cover in the NCAA tournament. That spread 4.5, totals 165 and a hook. After that, Georgia at a fast pace against St. Louis, who also likes to get up and go. You'll see St. Louis also on this graphic, just a few slots below Georgia. That's why that total is as high as it is, as Georgia and St. Louis is currently at 169.5. I saw it up to 170.5. I can't make a case for the under, and these numbers are why. You've also got Michigan playing at a fast pace. Prairie View, who's taking on Florida, although they don't want to do that. That could get out of control very quickly against Florida's defense. And then A&M against St. Mary's. Complete contrast in styles, as A&M is the 10th fastest paced team, according to KenPom there. Now, let's go to efficiency on offense, because that matters here. If you can make the most of those possessions, especially in the lower possession games, well, you're going to usually look pretty good. Your most efficient offenses in the NCAA tournament, Purdue is number 1. The guard play, it's deep, it's experienced, they can shoot beyond the arc. They're laying 25.5 against Queens. But big picture, this is why Purdue is so dangerous, but it's also why they're volatile, because they're not a very good defensive team either. And I think that's where it rears its ugly head for them in the big dance. Illinois is 2nd at 131.2, according to KenPom, in adjusted offensive efficiency. And that's huge, because in their part of the bracket, they could eventually see Florida, who's a bit more balanced, better defensively. And that would be a really good chess match between Golden and Underwood, with Illinois number 2. Then you have Alabama, despite all the possessions, still very efficient. Duke after them, Arizona with the depth they offer with guys off the bench. You could drop 20 at the drop of a hat. They are up there as well. Arkansas also listed in the top 10 among teams. Then Vandy, Michigan, Florida, BYU, rounding out your most efficient offenses. But it's the NCAA tournament. We care about defenses here. Defense wins championships. Defenses win in March. When those shots aren't falling, can you rely on a team that can stop the other team from getting buckets? Well, that's what you need here. And right now, Michigan, your most efficient defense, according to KenPom, on his website. Duke is after them, and I think that makes a lot of sense when you watch Duke play and how they turn their defense into offense. Then you have Arizona, Iowa State, Houston, which is no surprise there on the list, Florida, Nebraska, Gonzaga, Kansas, UConn. Well, let's just think about this. The teams that are on both of those lists there on offense and defense, you have, let's see, Duke is on both. You have Arizona on both. You have Michigan on both, Florida on both, and I believe that is it. So those are the four teams that make it both on most efficient and most defense in our top 10. Now let's get to three-point shooting, because I'm obsessed with three-point shooting. The whole world is obsessed with three-point shooting. But to me, especially with the underdogs, if they can drain their threes, which is difficult with the sight lines, but if they can get hot beyond the arc, they can hang with anyone. It doesn't matter how good you are. Your best team shooting the three this year is St. Louis. Again, that goes into that total against Georgia, why it's 169.5. St. Louis shoots the three at 40.5%. Then you have Texas Tech at 39.3%. I know Toppin's out. They can still shoot beyond the arc. They're facing an Akron team who's also in the top 10 among tournament teams at 38.5% from three. Arkansas's elite beyond the arc. NC State was just eliminated, so we can remove them. Penn at 38.7%. Would you think about Penn catching the points against Illinois, plus 24.5, because they can score, and Illinois does like to get up and go? I am actually considering that. I think the under, though, might be the play there based on Brad Underwood's history in the Big Dance. So those are your teams that are great at shooting the three ball. Now let's quickly go to the free throw line, where to me this matters more for favorites. If you're laying it with a team because of fouling late, you want to make sure that that team can hit their free throws. Well, St. Mary's is the best in the nation, not just the best among teams in the tournament, 81.1%. Vandy is after them, second best among the field shooting the free throws. Illinois, Wisconsin, Ohio State, Houston. Then you have Iowa, Louisville, Siena, and NC State. But the key favorites are St. Mary's is laying 3.5 against A&M. If A&M is going to foul late, the Gales are good at the charity stripe. That is massive, and you have to factor that into your handicap if you want to lay the 3.5 there. Illinois is an 11.5-point favorite against McNeese, who's great defensively. If McNeese is trying to make this a game late, they're going to foul Vandy. That could help you get that cover at that number. Wisconsin against High Point, that's a 10-point spread. Probably right on the cusp like Vanderbilt with free throws mattering. That makes sense to just make sure you know which teams can and can't shoot free throws. Here are your worst teams at the charity stripe. Long Island, so don't even touch them as a dog. Iowa State, which is not good because they're going to be favored in a lot of these matchups. North Carolina, Miami, Missouri, Villanova, Tennessee, Penn, Northern Iowa, and then Furman. Round out your list. And that, my friends, is rank and file. If you're looking to put your March tournament knowledge to the test at the highest level, we got something for you. Splash Sports is offering a $1 million guaranteed in contest prizes in a high-stakes Survivor contest. $1,000 to enter, $1 million on the line. It's NFL Survivor, but the big dance. One pick per day, you can't use the same team twice. And right now, use promo code VSINMM26, get a 50% deposit match up to $100, a free Quick Picks entry up to $20 on them, plus a 100% Quick Picks payout boost on an entry up to $20. SplashSports.com/VSIN.
Out here on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
Cruising along here, I'm Dustin Sweetelson. This is Cashing Out on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network. It is the best time of year. I mean, the NCAA tournament, it doesn't get better than this. Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, it's the best four-day stretch we have. There's nothing that really compares to the chaos, the carnage, the potential, the hope, the dreams that are completely just gone in the blink of an eye. And to help us analyze all of it in terms of the bracket, we're going to go to the Progressive guest line. Welcome in one of our favorites. He is Aaron Torres, Fox Sports Radio. Also the host of the Aaron Torres podcast at Aaron_Torres on X. And he joins us now on the Progressive guest line. Aaron, talk to me, man. A lot of people getting their brackets filled out. You're taking the probably more pragmatic approach. You are waiting to fill out your bracket, and the reason you're doing that is because you want to wait on injuries before you lock some of these things in. What are the key injuries that stand out to you that people should really be thinking more about before the big dance gets going?
Yeah, it's funny, you know, just being in the media, you know, the second the bracket comes out Sunday night, everybody wants your immediate picks and all that. And I certainly have thoughts, but, you know, I just think that it feels like more than any other year. One, there were just a lot of injuries even before the tournament. Richie Saunders, JT Toppin, guys that are out for the year. But, you know, just in those conference tournaments, Silas Demery, the starting point guard at UConn, leaves the game. We think he'll be fine, but we'll see if there's any final updates. Obviously, Duke was down two starters in the ACC tournament. We think Patrick Gongbo will be back. We'll see about Caleb Foster later on in the tournament. UCLA had two guys that left in the conference tournament, arguably their two best players. And, you know, again, Mick Cronin says that they would have been good to go, but we don't know for sure. Heck, I'll take it a step further. Is SMU, you know, they lose in the ACC tournament without their third leading scorer, BJ Edwards. I thought very strategically said that he would be available for the tournament. And basically that was kind of a sign to the committee. Hey, we're going to be at full strength. Let us in. So the committee puts SMU in. They're playing on Wednesday night. And now it comes out today that BJ Edwards might not be available. So I think Andy Enfield might have pulled a fast one on the committee, because if you listened to the committee chair, Keith Gill, he referenced SMU being at full strength on why they were one of the last couple teams in. So I could go on and on, but those are some key ones. And like I said, it just feels like 24 hours out, whatever, 36 hours out from the main bracket. I don't ever remember more being up in the air as far as who could be available, who won't be available, and then just who's going to be less than 100%.
That's very well said. Now, we do know who's going to be the 11th seed out of the West, because Texas took down NC State earlier today. They're going to face BYU. We finally have a point spread. BYU's just a 1.5-point favorite. The total's 159.5. And Aaron, I don't know about you, but I don't know how to evaluate the Cougars since Richie Saunders went down. I love A.J. DeBansta. He's a stud. He's probably going to be the number one overall pick in the draft. But Texas has a lot of guys who can shoot, who can score, who can get up and go in Sean Miller's system. Do you think that Texas could give BYU a run for their money here?
Yeah, so I'm torn, because I've always liked Texas's personnel all season long. And it just felt like they could never put together a stretch of consistent basketball. And first-year head coach, you know, Sean Miller, a bunch of new guys, whatever. But I just kept waiting and waiting and waiting. And then I'm watching this game tonight. Obviously, it's a 2-point margin, but Texas was kind of in control the whole game. And I was really thinking, like, I think I like the personnel at Texas more than I like the personnel at BYU. So it's kind of the, do you trust what you see with your eyes, or do you trust what a almost 40-game sample size tells you, which is we really haven't gotten, you know, 3 or 4 good games in a row from Texas. But it's interesting. I did not know that was the spread, but it kind of reflects what my eyes tell me, is that BYU earned that 6th seed. They, you know, they have some very nice wins. They schedule tough in the out of conference and won games. But I think the team that they're taking into the tournament, I don't feel great about. And like I said, I think Texas player for player is probably just about as good as they are.
Aaron Torres is our guest, Fox Sports Radio host. Catch him Saturdays, 11 p.m. to 2 a.m. Eastern time on Fox Sports Radio, but more importantly, Thursday all day with the big dance beginning, and of course, the Aaron Torres podcast as well. Let's stay in the West region, because I got to tell you, Aaron, I get very concerned when something I like is trendy, and I can't find someone who doesn't have Arizona at least getting to the title game. I love the path. I love the team. Do you believe this is the year Tommy Lloyd can get to the Final Four and advance to the finals?
So it's funny. Like, I'm sort of with you from the perspective of, I am surprised how many people are taking Arizona, because it feels like all year long, everybody, and dating, this is dating back to the opener, and I think that was the night you and I talked, Dustin, after they played Florida. It feels like everyone has been just trying to pick apart why this team can't do it. And, you know, they're going to lose this game. And what about when they play Houston? And what about in the Big 12 tournament? And what about when they go to UConn? And they just keep finding ways to win. And now I think even Arizona fans are like, guys, you've been picking against us all year. Don't start now. But listen, No, and seriously, and I think, listen, I think they're not only the best team, but like we said about Duke, they could be entering this tournament at less than 100%. Michigan is coming off of a loss. And then obviously Florida is coming off of a you know, quite possibly maybe their worst loss of the season in terms of a margin. So I get why everybody likes them, and I think they should like them. I do think Arizona is the favorite going into this tournament, especially with Duke's injuries. And I'll also say this, I really do like the path. You know, I certainly think that Arkansas with Darius Acuff, listen, is there a scenario where Darius Acuff goes off for 40 and Arkansas finds a way? Of course. But that front court is really going to struggle if they play Arkansas. And really what you're banking against if you're Arizona is if somebody doesn't go crazy from three, whether it's Wisconsin, whether it's Arkansas, you probably will be in Indianapolis. You probably will be in your first Final Four since 2001. And then once you get there, anything's up in the air. But I not only do I like them as well, I have noticed that, like, I'm genuinely shocked by the number of people after the season that we saw that are all now picking Arizona and backing Arizona.
Oh, look, I'm a better, Aaron. That's what we do here. I bet against them so many times and lost so much money. At this point, I got to join the party. That's why I believe in Arizona right now.
Let me say this. I'll tell you a funny story. So I was down at the Circus Sportsbook in Kentucky last week and you know, in the VEASAN studio in Kentucky, and I was doing all my conference championship stuff, and on air, you know, I was literally – you know, well, you know, if they face Houston, and on air, I had the epiphany of, like, I'm doing the thing that everybody has done all year. And while I was live, I literally changed my pick and I was going to take Houston. I said, you know what? I picked against Arizona when they played Houston. I thought that they were going to lose in this game. I thought they were going to lose in that game. And so you're not the only one, man, because ask an Arizona fan, you know, they'll be quick to tell you. I mean, I really think it goes back to that season opener again, against Florida in Vegas, where it was just Florida's the defending champ. Todd Golden is the next big thing. Arizona took that personally, and essentially for 33 games after that, they've been doing the same. And they made us all look bad at some point. I promise you that.
Aaron Torres is with us, Fox Sports Radio host, the Aaron Torres Podcast, breaking down college hoops, college football all year long at @Aaron_Torres on X. All right. You know what we like to do this time of year, Aaron? We're all looking for them dogs. We're looking for underdogs, some higher seeds that can knock off better teams, bigger programs. Who are maybe your one or two favorite underdogs in the opening round that you think could be a little bit scary and maybe pull this thing off?
You know, the two that jumped out as soon as the bracket came out are two of the very trendy ones. They're two of the other 3-6-11 matchups, and it's VCU versus North Carolina, South Florida versus Louisville. Listen, with the North Carolina thing, I just think it feels to me like a lot of the wind has come out of the sails of that program. I think everybody knows, but their best player, Caleb Wilson, gets hurt right after the first Duke game. They think he'll be back. He gets, you know, not even re-injured. He gets a completely new injury right before the second Duke game and is ruled out for the year. It just feels like they lost a lot of that juice that they had. VCU has won 16 of 17, which is kind of a crazy stat. They wouldn't have even been in the tournament if they hadn't gotten in, if they hadn't won the A-10 tournament. So I just think VCU is as hot as anybody in college basketball. And then the other one that's trendy, but, you know, South Florida, you know, we know the story, but Brian Hodgson, the South Florida coach, is from upstate New York. He's going to Buffalo. I was one that thought he might just stay in upstate New York and take the Syracuse job, but I saw earlier tonight that Jeff Goodman is reporting that he is out of the running there and he has withdrawn from that job search. And so I just bring it up because he's going back there. His dad's going to be in the building. And with Louisville, listen, I don't think I'm breaking any news here, where Louisville really took care of the teams that they were supposed to this season, but really struggled to pick up signature wins. And that Brian Hodgson South Florida team, they play very similarly to Alabama. Brian Hodgson comes from that Alabama NATO's coaching tree. They score a lot of points. They get up and down. And it wouldn't surprise me if they beat Louisville.
Awesome stuff as always, my friend. Would love to chat a couple more times during the big dance. He's Aaron Torres. Check him out. Fox Sports Radio, the Aaron Torres Podcast, and live on Fox Sports Radio Saturday, 11 p.m. to 2 a.m. Eastern. You're the best, man. Rest up. Get ready because Thursday's the big one.
I appreciate you. We'll talk soon, okay? Thank you.
Awesome stuff from Aaron, as usual. When we return, Steve Mackinnon has some incredible first-round trends in the VSiN March Mania betting guide. I'll share my favorite with you on the other side of Cashing Out.
VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
It's Cashing Out. I'm Dustin Sweetelson. You're locked into VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Sometimes when I say my last name, it sounds like I'm mocking myself, because I think when people would say my name, they'd be like, Dustin Sweetelson. I don't know why, but that's how it comes out of my mouth. Unfortunately, I mock myself. That's just what we have to live with here. That's the lot in life I've been given. Even I'm my own bully at times. But anyway, appreciate you making us part of the show, part of your night. However you may be tuning into the show, Sirius XM Channel 158, YouTube TV, the VSiN Watch app, and radio affiliates across the United States of God Bless America. Okay, late night NIT action. We were looking really good early. We're still looking okay. 8:14 to go. UNLV on top of UC Irvine, 57-52. Plenty of time. UNLV's laying 4.5. We caught 3 last night. So we're in a good spot. But they jumped out to a huge lead. In fact, I want to see what that lead was here. And we'll get to Dead or Alive, looking at Sweet 16 futures that are out there. But the Rebs need this. They need to make a run because Josh Pastner's trying to find some juice with this program to get some momentum looking ahead to next season. He also wants some money. And if he improves, he can coach and he can win with these guys, he'll get a lot more money. But they were up by as much as, let me pull up the box, 15 points at one point. Good God. They were up 13 at halftime. Yeah, this is not great. This is not great. We are catching 3-8-3, though. We should be okay in the end. With that, I want to play a little game because the futures are out. We now have odds for the Elite Eight with the Sweet 16 as well, because the paths are there. The question is there anyone worth a look in terms of the future market for the Sweet 16? We'll do that by playing Dead or Alive. All right, let's begin with the long shots first and work our way down. And what I always like to preface with when we're talking about long shots, they're long shots for a reason, okay? People freak out, hey, your 30-1 didn't happen. No kidding, it's 30-1. I only have to be right a few times to be profitable if I'm betting those 30-1s, okay? So we're going to begin with the longest shot on the board that did jump out to me because of the style of play, because of the experience at coach, because of the path that they technically have here now because of a couple of situations. The Akron Zips are 20-1 to reach the Sweet 16. Well, how would they need to get there? You got Akron right now with an opening round matchup out of the Midwest where they're taking on Texas Tech. And what does everyone keep pointing out? JT Toppin's not playing for Texas Tech. That's huge. It's not just the scoring element. It's the rebounding. He's their best rebound getter at 11 per game. That would be crucial. That would be a huge mismatch for a team like Akron that doesn't have the athleticism down low to deal with a guy like Toppin. But because he's out of the lineup, I do think that evens the playing field some. They are an 7.5-point dog for a reason. But if they can hit their three ball, which they are elite shooting the ball beyond the arc, if they can do that against Texas Tech, who's down a player, and somehow pull off the upset, who's waiting for them in the second round of action? Alabama. Alabama may not have their second leading scorer in Holloway for that game. What does Alabama like to do? Get up, go, run, offense, shooting, threes, okay? Akron wants to play that game. They're ready for that fight. Is there a world where Akron could get this draw with taking down Texas Tech without Toppin and then taking down Alabama, eventually meeting up in the Sweet 16 with likely Michigan, somehow maybe Georgia or St. Louis, but likely Michigan? 20-1's worth a little sweat here. I don't hate that. I'd even bet it and then maybe find a way to bet against it should they advance, because we're only talking about winning 2 games for the Akron Zips. The next one is a little bit shorter, and this is a team we've been on because they're on while we're on the air a lot. That is Santa Clara. Would you take a look at Santa Clara? Is this ticket dead or alive to reach the Sweet 16? They open with Kentucky. Kentucky is a public team. Kentucky is a team that has underachieved every step of the way, and Santa Clara is experienced. They have size, and they have a coach in Herb Sendek who's been waiting to capitalize on this opportunity. If they take down Kentucky, Santa Clara out of the Midwest would then face Iowa State. I have an Iowa State 28-1 to win the title. I would tell you this about the Cyclones. There's a reason why I waited until right before the tournament to add them as a bet, and also was able to get a better number right before this thing started than when I started looking at them in early January. Because this is a team late in the year that's been playing with fire. They've gotten off to slow starts. And in the NCAA tournament, if you get off to a slow start, sometimes it's not as easy to climb out of that hole with the shooting being a little bit more difficult. Could Santa Clara, with their size, be a bad matchup with a slower-paced game against Iowa State? Ooh, there is a world where they could get it done and advance to the Sweet 16 to take on either Tennessee or Virginia there. I kind of like them at 8-1. Not as much as I like Akron, though. And Akron's a way bigger number. The next one, how about we go over to the South, where VCU is very trendy, but it's apropos. They deserve to be trendy. Taking on North Carolina in the opening round, VCU is hitting their stride. They won their conference tournament. They're playing with house money. I love this offense. I love the way that they can just get buckets, and I think they're very much live to beat North Carolina in the opening round. Well, if VCU does that, they would then line up with Illinois. Illinois, great offense. But if VCU can somehow match them in the intensity and get up and go and score with them, they do have a chance to knock off Illinois. I think that's a bad matchup because of the depth of Illinois. So I do believe this is a ticket that would be dead, VCU to reach the Sweet 16. Unfortunately, there's a lot of size for Illinois. There's a lot of shooting for them. They have multiple guards who can beat you. And I just don't think there's depth on the other side for VCU to match up with them specifically. How about St. Mary's? St. Mary's is plus 360 to reach the Sweet 16. They're going to open with A&M, contrasting styles, and they like to slow it down. What we talked about on the show is they're great from the charity stripe, and they slow it down with the possessions. And I do think St. Mary's, because of that style of fight, should they beat A&M, which I don't think is going to be easy, they would then match up with Houston. Well, what does Houston want to do? They want to play a lower scoring, lower possession game, not a lot of shooting. St. Mary's is ready for that. Now, they're not as physical as Houston, so they would need to find a creative way, especially be able to play that perimeter offense that we've seen St. Mary's in the past be really good at. It's a tough matchup from a physical standpoint because Houston's grown men. You got Emmanuel Sharpe out there, okay? He's not messing around. But I do think there is a world where St. Mary's at plus 360 absolutely could advance to the Sweet 16 and face a team like Illinois there. I don't hate them at plus 360. You tell me, is that ticket dead or alive? How about UCLA at 2-1 to reach the Sweet 16? I mean, they open with UCF. As much as I like UCF and I did bet on UCF, I do think UCLA will prevail and win this game, especially because they've got their two leading scorers healthy. After that, it's a matchup with UConn. Maybe I'm crazy. I'm not buying the UConn hype here. I think that team play, and they did have a good out-of-conference. I'll be fair to them. But I do think playing in the Big East, like, they're not quite as battle-tested late in the year. Hurley's a Hall of Famer, right? They have a ton of weapons. They have a ton of guys who can play. But Mick Cronin is an elite tournament coach. I think there's a world where they could take down UConn. And should they do that, they would be going all the way to the Sweet 16. We've seen Mick Cronin do it with worse teams than he has this year. He's got an offense now. He's got scorers in Bilodeau and Dent who can just get buckets when it matters the most, plus his defensive style. I like UCLA 2-1 to make the Sweet 16. You tell me, is it dead or alive? Now let's lay a price with St. John's. Minus 105 in the East region. Now, the committee didn't do anyone in this region any favors. It's Hall of Fame coach after Hall of Fame coach. St. John's opens Northern Iowa. Very trendy upset pick by a lot of people. But St. John's has a lot of size and a lot of grown men, by the way, that I think will be able to get past Northern Iowa. It's a 10.5 point spread for a reason. After that, it's Kansas. If we're just going to talk about two teams that you have a lot of questions about, but you love the concept of what they could be, St. John's and Kansas would be that in the second round of the tournament. I think Pitino and his team are a little bit more together than Kansas is with that Darren Peterson situation. So you do that or you're St. John's. It's not easy to take down Bill Self, but I do think St. John's at the price of minus 105 isn't crazy to reach the Sweet 16. And then we get to Wisconsin. Wisconsin at plus 120. Is this dead or alive to get to the Sweet 16? I know High Point, everyone thinks they're going to beat the Badgers. Dude, the Badgers are so good offensively. They shoot the three. They've got the maybe, I'm not going to say the best. The most underrated. It's close to the best backcourt in the country, okay? It's up there. It's one of. It's a top six backcourt in the country with the Badgers. And they get past High Point. After that, it's Arkansas. The difference between Arkansas and Wisconsin is that, one, Greg Gard's on the sideline and Calipari's on the other. But more importantly, Greg Gard is a defensive coach. While his team is all offense this year, he still has in his back pocket the ability to coach defense, potentially slow down the Razorbacks' offense. I do think Wisconsin at plus 120 should be a team that can get to the Sweet 16. So of that group, in dead or alive, the ones that I think are most alive, Akron at 20-1. VCU or St. Mary's at plus 360, UCLA at 2-1, and Wisconsin at plus 120. Those would be my favorites out of that group. Brackets are for everyone. This is for bettors. Introducing the VSiN March Betting Challenge presented by ProfitX and EdgeBoost. Pick spreads and totals across all 67 tourney games. Earn points for every correct call. Climb the leaderboard. Prizes, $2,000 overall, $1,000 for second, $500 for third, plus separate prizes for the best first and second half of the tournament, over $6,000 on the line. Here's the kicker. Got an EdgeBoost account? Every single prize doubles. Head to VSiN.com/contest, create your account, and get in the March Betting Challenge. VSiN.com/contest.